Taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller. Pleased to have you listening in. Give us a call with your question. We have one open line at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Lynn in Evansville has been patiently waiting, so let's go to Lynn. Hi, Lynn.
Hello, and thank you, Dr. Sawchuk and Larry, for taking my call.
Sure.
Welcome.
Say, I'm the owner of a wonderful three-legged male cat, name of Max, who actually has survived survived a bout with cholangiohepatitis. And after, you know, early on after his bout in 2004, he had some excessive grooming over his right side, about over the liver area. Mm-hmm. And so I had some concern about persistent pain, and so the veterinarian took him back to the veterinarian, who did some liver enzyme tests, and none were elevated at that point in time. He was purring and eating, and so we thought perhaps it was just behavioral. Well, currently now, his hair loss is not just over that area, but now is his full abdomen, so it's progressed.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, he still eats and he purrs, although he's quite sedentary.
Yeah.
And I wondered if there were better tests to differentiate between whether or not he does have pain or it is kind of just a behavioral issue.
Yeah, what you're describing is barbering their hair coat. And I was just over at a friend's house this weekend, and the cat's whole back end is like totally devoid of hair.
Yeah.
And it's the funniest looking cat. And but there's several reasons why cats will do that. What you're talking about is what's called psychogenic alopecia, which just means, you know, it's like us biting our fingernails. You know, the cat gets worried, starts licking. And sometimes cats will do that. But we're starting to think more and more that there's a medical reason for this. And by far, the most common medical reason for cats to barber their hair coat is because they're itchy. Not so much in pain, but that there's something bothering their skin, whether it be a dietary hypersensitivity, an allergy to external parasites like fleas, you know, a mite infestation on the skin, you know, allergies to environmental things like house dust and molds and all those things. So it's like, where do you start when we're dealing with this? Because it can be just about anything.
May I ask, it's not bilateral. It's very specific to initially one side.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, it could be that there was, I mean, I don't know whether they did any biopsies through that site or if there was anything done medically when he went through his liver gallbladder issue. But, you know, whether, you know, he may still have some discomfort there. And if it is pain related, you may want to consider trying him on, you know, an anti-inflammatory that's good for cats, a pain medication. The two that we would pick for pain, mm-hmm. one would be called meloxicam, which is, you have to be really careful with using that in cats because they don't metabolize it well. So we use it at a high dose for the first day and then very quickly drop down to a much lower dose.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is called, we'll use buprenorphine drops. And it goes, they're sublingual drops that go under the tongue. And you can't mix them with food. They have to actually be applied in the mouth. But that might be something as a trial to say if it's pain related, let's deal with this pain and
sure.
see if it stops.
Yeah.
But I'd be more inclined to think there's something with the skin.
Okay. And may I ask just one brief question? Is there a way to differentiate in cats whether or not because he's kind of sedentary, he's gained some weight, and the question is he overweight or does he have edema? How do you tell?
Well, edema usually can pit. When you push in on it, it'll actually leave a thumbprint. And so if you've got, you know, swollen legs, and usually if they're that edematous, they'll be sick. There's a reason for it. And so my guess is if he's laying around, he's a fat cat. And and so, you know, feeling for the distribution, most of the time if you have edema, it's in dependent areas like in the distal limbs and, you know, feet and so on. If it's his whole body that's big and he's got little skinny legs, then he's just a fat cat and probably needs to be up and exercising more on decreased calorie intake and, you know, maybe a diet change.
Good luck. Thanks a lot, Lynn, for your call. Ryan in Eagle River, your turn. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 5-year-old, 17-pound Bichon poop.
Okay.
It seems to scratch at herself and bite at herself so severely to the point where she actually loses the hair in the spots that she's biting at, and then she'll continue on into tearing into her own flesh.
Oh, my goodness.
She has been tested for allergies, switched to different diets. It seems to only start when, like, I actually leave her alone for any period of time.
Okay.
She gets plenty of exercise. Honestly, I think it's an anxiety issue, but every vet I've taken her to has tried me on something different, and nothing has worked. I'm completely at a loss for what's going on with her.
Yeah, I mean, if this only happens when she's being left alone, and you come home to a chewed spot, that when you're home on the weekend with her, you never see her chew, she's a buyer's, you know, she's fine, then it definitely could be a behavior problem. And sometimes we will see things like separation anxiety, which is, you know, fear of being left alone, being expressed through self-mutilation. And that's one of the things that we'll see with dogs that develop what are called lick granulomas, where they'll lick and lick and lick and chew until the hair is gone and they're down to a raw spot on their skin, and then it gets all scarred and irritated looking. So it's possible that that's what's happening. And what it comes down to is, you know, sitting down and really taking a thorough history, not just addressing the immediate problem, but what could be driving this. And so I hope that you've talked to your veterinarians about the fact that, you know, she only does this when she's left alone. And, you know, when I'm home with her, she doesn't itch at all. You know, could this be a behavior problem? You may want to, if that is the case, be looking at, is there something that we could use? And there's a new drug. Well, it's actually not new, but it's just been licensed for dogs in the last year or so by the Lilly Company. And it's fluoxetine, or like the version of Prozac, like people take, in a chewable tablet. And it might be something that would make her feel more comfortable. But, you know, that's something that you'd have to talk to your veterinarian about, whether a psychoactive drug is in order at this point.
Okay. Good luck. And thank you again for your call. And Kathy and Gaze Mills, we're on to you now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a dog that's been on Proin ever since we got her from the shelter when she was a puppy. And I think it upsets her stomach, and she has to take 3 pills a day. And I guess my question is, I'm wondering, do you have any, and it doesn't work perfectly. I mean, I still, you know, the back seat of my car, she leaks in that. She leaks, you know, if she's been sleeping, she leaks.
Okay.
And if we don't give it to her exactly every 8 hours, then it's a problem for the next 12 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's really, and I'm wondering if there's something else we can do, or, you know, this is our only option.
Yeah, well, it isn't your only option. I actually brought this up earlier in the show. Proin is phenylpropanolamine, and it's used as it's what's called an alpha agonist, and it causes contraction or tightening of that bladder sphincter. And it doesn't work for all dogs. And in one of the things that it's used for, like I said earlier, in people, is it suppresses appetite. And so you may be finding that you're getting with your dog, rather than just the bladder side effect, of tightening the bladder sphincter, some of the appetite changes and so on, and that's what's making her stomach not be quite 100%. The other drug that I would recommend that you talk to your veterinarian about trying is estrogen. We use a drug called DES, diethylstilbestrol. It's used usually as a loading dose to start with. We use it for like 5 to 7 days, and then drop down to using it maybe once a week. I've had some dogs be able to go off of it for months before they need to go back on a loading dose again. The side effects of estrogen, which are rare, but you want to use it at the lowest dose and as infrequently as you can. And I have never in all my almost 30 years of being a practicing veterinarian seen this be an issue for a dog, but you can cause bone marrow suppression. So if you were to be using it incorrectly and using it daily or at high levels, it could suppress the bone marrow and cause anemia and other conditions. So one of the things that we'll do before we start a dog on DES is get a baseline blood cell count to make sure that we've got a nice, when they're nice and healthy and normal, what it is, and then follow it up after they've been on the drug for a couple of months, and then maybe annually be looking at it. Side effects of Proin are, the big problems are what you're seeing, appetite suppression and GI upset, but we can also run into troubles with causing hypertension. So I tend to lean more towards, for most of my patients, using estrogen.
Okay.
And only pull out Proin if estrogen fails. So I tend to be more of an estrogen fan. And maybe it's just the fact that, you know, my, you know, longevity as a veterinarian, we've seen kind of things wax and wane over the years. And Proin's getting a little more press right now. But I think Talk to your vet about DES.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And an email from Vern in Muscadet. Our female Welsh Terrier, Daisy, has been itching and weight gain issues, kind of a couch potato now, and our vet did a test for thyroid something, yeah. He says, and we're waiting the results. If it is thyroid, what might we expect down the road?
Well, thyroid disease, and it's what's interesting is that there was a pet insurance company that came out with the top 10 things that they're presented with, and hypothyroidism or low thyroid hormone production was number 10 on their list of common medical problems in dogs. So we do see it quite a lot. What happens when dogs become hypothyroid is their thyroid gland just doesn't produce enough hormone, and the thyroid is kind of the gas pedal of the dog's body, and when it's not working properly, they're just going to kind of idle along, and their metabolism's going to slow down, and they're going to gain weight, and they may get secondary skin infections, and they're going to get greasier, and their hair may start to get thin, and, you know, they just are sluggish couch potato dogs. And so I think it's a good idea if your dog has any of the other symptoms besides weight gain to be checking this out. And we usually do a thyroid panel to have a look and see what's going on that way. If your dog is diagnosed with being hypothyroid, it's a matter of putting them on a thyroid supplement. It's usually given twice a day and then monitoring after that. And dosage has to be adjusted for each individual dog. So for the first few months, you may be going back and forth to your vet to get the level adjusted. And once they're on a level, it's usually pretty stable for most of their life. And you just annually get it checked to make sure that they're doing okay. So hopefully that's the answer. And the dog will be, you know, up and active and losing some of that extra weight.
Another question relating to ticks. The person is wondering, you know, she brushes regularly and hasn't noticed ticks, but they've been out. And other than a superficial inspection, how can she determine if the dog has picked up a tick? Does she run her fingers through her fur, feeling for a bump? And if I don't find one, or if I do find one, what's the best way to get rid of it?
Oh, you know, ticks can be really hard to find depending on what species you're dealing with. Ixodes, or the deer tick, can be as tiny as like a little dot on a page. I mean, they're so tiny, and they like to get in places like behind the ears and between the toes and in places that you may not be normally looking or feeling. The big wood ticks, obviously, are more easy to find, but it depends on the thickness of your dog's hair coat, the color of your dog's hair coat. So I'm glad you're going over your dog with a fine-tooth comb. But still, practice good tick control with either Frontline, Advantix. There's another one called Vector 3D. There's several products that are out there that work really well, not 100% effective, but work very well at helping to control ticks. When you find one, I recommend removing it manually. Don't put nail polish on it. Don't put a lit match on it. Don't put gasoline on it. Don't put, you know, all those old wives' tales. They do make these little things called, you know, that are tick removers that look like a measuring spoon with a little wedge cut out of it that you can scoop the tick off the dog's body. You can use tweezers. If you're careful to not squeeze the tick's body to prematurely inject the dog with some of the organisms that may be in the tick, so you want to pinch right down by the head, you'll probably get a little piece of skin coming out with it as well. If the head gets left in, don't worry about it. Okay, we tend to want to pick at it and get rid of it, but you know that's going to end up causing more skin irritation, and the dog's going to resent having that done. Usually the body will take care of it on its own.
And those little tick, you had one on your keychain.
Yeah,
for a while.
I do. And I actually, it's in my lab coat pocket because I'm seeing so many ticks at work. I just left it there. And it looks like just a little metal piece like you would use like for a spark plug gapper. Yeah. But it's got a wedge cut in the end, and it just slides right underneath the tick and pulls it right out. And I got it at one of the outdoor supply places, and it works really well. And I've used it on myself, and I have to admit it's quite comfortable, and it works fine. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Sally in Wayland, Minnesota has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Sally.
Hello, Larry. Hello, Doctor.
Hi.
Thank you. I have a 3-year-old standard poodle named Maisie, and she's a really good, sweet companion. Man, she's a good dog. She has chronic ear problems, though. Every couple of months, she starts shaking her head, and then I know that it's getting really bad when she starts walking in the perimeter of the room as if she's off balance or something. So I've talked to my doctor about it, and the doctor says, Myconazole shampoo, 1 teaspoon in each ear canal, lather and let it sit for a couple minutes, massage, let it sit for a couple more minutes, as long as I can. And he said between 5 and 30 minutes. Rinse copiously with water, massage it again, rinse again, make sure the soap is gone. Then, he says, to flush with the rubbing alcohol to chase the water out, let it dry thoroughly, and apply Melodic. And I've done this. And she's still shaking her head a lot.
Yeah.
And then he says, he goes on to say, you know, do the Melodic once a day for 7 days, then once every 14 days. So what I need from you is, second opinion, is this appropriate? And should I, I mean, when I put the rubbing alcohol in her ears, when she winces in pain.
Oh, my goodness. And yeah, I'm wincing in pain for her here. If you could see my face, I'm going,
yeah,
oh, my goodness.
It's terrible. She's such a good dog, and I hate torturing her like this.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, ears are one of those things that because they're kind of a J-shaped ear canal, it's difficult to look in, and then you've got the added problem of her being a poodle. They tend to have a lot of hair in their ear canals as well, which can decrease the amount of air circulation you can get, and she's got floppy ears. So she's got like a double whammy when it comes to being more prone to ear disease. I think where you're at right now, if, you know, I have to admit that is a very unique way of cleaning and dealing with ears. I have never heard of someone putting shampoo directly in the ear canal. I have to worry that, you know, what if she's got a ruptured eardrum? What are you doing to that ear? And have they actually done a good otoscopic exam where they've gone in there? And if her ears are sore and infected, you sometimes have to have them under either heavy sedation or even general anesthesia. I have seen dogs flinch under anesthesia while their ears are being taken care of. So, I mean, it can be an extremely painful spot. But chronic ear disease, I read some statistic at some point that 30% of dogs with chronic ear disease have ruptured eardrums. So you really have to be careful about what you're putting in there. So my recommendation is talk to your veterinarian about maybe a referral to a veterinary dermatologist or a veterinarian that has what's called a video otoscope. They can then be looking in the ears with a video playing. You know, they actually can go in there and look. It's all done, you know, with fiber optics and so on. And you can get a better idea of what's going on. You can clean more thoroughly. You can collect samples for culture, biopsy things if you need to, remove excessive hair, have a good idea of what's going on the other side of, you know, what you can see visibly from the upper end. You may even find that one of the things that will be recommended is to have what's called a CT scan, a CAT scan done of your dog's skull. Dogs have a large bony structure called the bulla, which is their middle ear cavity that can be filled up with goo and acts as a chronic source of infection. So that might be another way of getting a diagnosis as well. So if you were to come in and see our dermatologist, my guess is once they've done their cursory exam, their physical exam, looking in the ear as much as they can, they'd probably be recommending anesthesia, CT scan, and then a video otoscope. So I think that would be the way to go.
There you have it. Thank you very much for calling, Sally. Tony in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Tony.
Hi. I was calling. We have a female cat about 4 to 5 years old that we've had for about 3.5 years. And we got her as a stray, though she was formerly owned by someone else. She was declawed in front and was a typical-sized house cat. But she came in around Thanksgiving, and shortly thereafter, she started gaining weight.
Okay.
And I had been gone at school, and I came back for Christmas. And she was, I'm guessing, around 15 to 17 pounds.
Ooh,
man.
So she's right at the point. She's not terribly obese, but she is a larger cat.
That is obese. Okay. There's very few cats except Maine Coons that can carry that kind of weight and look good.
Yeah, and that's like the majority of her body looks fairly well, though you see at like her undercarriage area that is where you notice the majority of the weight. She's got like a larger skin pouch that kind of waddles back and forth.
Yeah.
And
you want to know how to get this weight off of her, I bet. Huh?
Yeah, and we limit her to, in the morning, we give her about a cup of food, just like basic Meow Mix brand cat food, dry food, and she eats that. And it will typically last until either late into the evening that she'll finally finish it or even have a little left over in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not eating a ton of food, but she also doesn't seem to be losing any. And she does go outside and run around and play outside. So,
well, I think, you know, weight loss is one of those things where it comes down to actually two things. Number one, she's spayed, and that is going to lower her metabolism, and she's not going to need as many calories as a cat that's going to be cycling and coming into heat. So a cup of Meow Mix or one of those, you know, popular foods has about 320 to 360 calories per cup. Most cats, when I do a diet calculation for what their ideal caloric intake should be for weight loss, usually comes out about 200, 220 calories. So she may be taking in 100 calories more per day than she actually needs. So that would be the number one thing to do, is get your veterinarian to look at what's her ideal weight, do a little calculation and find out how many calories she needs. Getting her on an appropriate diet that is going to be probably a weight loss diet, where you put out a measured amount of the calories that she needs. So that's number one. Feed her the right amount of calories to support her lean body weight, to help her lose weight. Number two, lots and lots of exercise. Yeah, she goes outside and run around, but more exercise. Anything you can do to get her up and moving around to increase that metabolism. So
boy, if you got 100 calories a day, that's 3,000 calories.
He makes a pound of fat, so within 30 days, they gain a pound. You got it right there. Yeah. And, you know, cats being carnivores, they really do better on a high-protein diet, and we call it the Catkins diet. For cats, they tend to help. It helps support lean body tissue, and a lot of the popular foods tend to be a little bit lower in protein and higher on the carb end, so that would be another reason to probably look at a diet from your veterinarian.
Thank you very much for calling, Tony. Appreciate it. I wish we could get to more callers, but we are out of time.
But I'll be back next month on May 12th.
May 12th. Sandy, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine, our guest today, and she will be back once again on May 12th, and we will do this all over again. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.